The average credit card late fee is now as high as $35, and that's just one of many fees you could be paying if you're not careful. Hi, I'm Rob West. Credit card companies make billions each year in interest charges and other fees, but almost all of them can be avoided. I'll tell you how to stop paying unnecessary credit card fees today. Then it's on to your calls at 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance Live, biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Proverbs 21:20 tells us, "Precious treasure and oil are in a wise man's dwelling, but a foolish man devours it." With a little planning and oversight, you can prevent credit card fees from devouring your treasure, and some of them you may not even be aware of. Obviously, the biggest fee you'll ever pay on a credit card is interest, which now averages around 24% of your remaining balance. That means if you carry a balance of $1,000, you'll pay $240 a year in interest alone. This is why it's so important to pay your balance off in full each month. If you have to adjust your budget to pay extra each month, you should do it as soon as possible. And remember, the interest you pay on the balance will more than wipe out any rewards you receive for using a credit card, so don't be fooled. Now, some credit cards have annual fees. It's a surcharge that you have to pay just for the privilege of using the card. While some cards with annual fees might charge as little as $35, others may ding you for as much as $500. Either way, you don't want to pay an annual fee, and you don't have to. Cancel that card and look around for one with no annual fees. And while those cards may give more rewards, remember, it won't matter if you carry a balance. Late fees are something else you don't want to pay. They could run as high as $30 for a first-time offense and go up to $40 the second time you're late making a payment. You can avoid late fees in any number of ways. Sign up for text alerts when a credit card bill is due. You can also set a reminder to alert you each month before the due date. You can even make a payment each time you use the card for an equal amount to the charge. That way, you'll never have a minimum amount due. You can set up an automatic payment from your checking account if you carry a balance, which again, you want to pay off as quickly as possible. Here's something else to avoid: cash advance fees. Check your credit card agreement. You might find there's a fee for taking a cash advance, an even higher interest rate on the amount you take out in cash. And the transaction doesn't even have to result in you actually getting cash. This fee could also be charged for getting money orders, exchanging foreign currency, wire transfers, sending money to a friend using an app, and making an auto loan payment. You can avoid cash advance fees by simply having cash on hand to meet any of those needs. Again, adjust your budget so you have margin. That's money left over after paying all of your bills, so you'll never need a cash advance. Okay, another one you never want to pay is a returned payment fee. Your bank will charge you a fee if you bounce a check. Everybody knows that. But if a check is going to a credit card company for a monthly payment and it bounces, the card issuer may also charge you a fee for a returned payment, which could be as high as $40. And if that mess results in a late payment, well, we've already told you about that one. There's really only one way to avoid returned payment fees, and that's by always having enough money in your checking account to make necessary payments. The only way to make sure that happens is by living on a budget, and if you're not, download the FaithFi app and it will help you set one up in no time. Then stick to it. Another charge you're likely to incur if you're not living on a budget is an over-the-limit fee. That's when you've maxed out a card and you keep using it. In many cases, the transaction will be declined, but there may also be a fee attached, and it could run from $25 to $35. Now, you may be able to sign up for over-limit protection with your card issuer, but that's really just treating the symptom. You never want to carry any balance on your card, let alone the maximum balance. So the best way to avoid over-the-limit fees is to pay off your balance. By the way, carrying a balance in excess of 30% of your available credit will negatively affect your credit score, another reason to avoid carrying a balance. Okay, we've gone over a whole batch of credit card fees you want to avoid, but it's not a complete list. Your card issuer may be able to charge you for other things like replacing your card, opting for paper statements, or increasing your credit limit. Again, check your agreement to see what possible fees are in the fine print. All right, your calls are next. 800-525-7000 for any financial topic. I'm Rob West, and we'll be right back. Stick around. It's great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance Live. I'm Rob West, your host. All right, it's time to take your calls and questions today on anything financial. We've got some lines open, and we'd love to hear from you. The number to call is 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. Let's begin today in Chicago. Hi, Flora. Thank you for calling. Go right ahead.
Hi. My question was about an adjustable rate mortgage.
Yeah.
It's due to... a so-called explode 2035. So I have an annuity of $1,200, and my mortgage is $1,200. That's the income. So I wanted to know what I couldn't get a mortgage. I couldn't get a loan. So what do I do now?
Okay, so you have a loan now on your mortgage, and the payment is equal to the income you're receiving from your annuity, but the payment has been going up with the adjustable rate. Is that right?
Slightly, yes. The rate is 3%, but the it's high because my taxes is due to be renewed, or what do you call it? Go down because I'm a senior.
Okay.
66, yes.
Well, that's great. But has the interest rate on the mortgage been rising?
No, it's 3%.
Okay, so it's a fixed rate mortgage, though, right?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
No, that's good, because if you had an adjustable rate mortgage with these rates headed up, you would have been increasing, that payment would have been increasing dramatically along with the mortgage interest rate. But given the fact that you're locked in at a really low interest rate, given where rates are today, that's a good thing. So what is the main question you're trying to wrestle with at this point?
I hope to be able to be close to paying it off, but what's going to happen if I don't?
Okay, I'm not following you. So you've this mortgage will last, if you just continue to pay the minimum payment, the scheduled payment, you'll pay it off in 2035. Is that what you said?
I believe so. They said that's when it's due to all of the interest will come due.
I see. Okay, so it's a balloon, meaning you're going to pay the interest on the back end?
That's what they said, yes, but I don't see it.
Okay. Well, what you need is an amortization schedule. That's the term for it. I would call your mortgage servicer, whoever you pay your bill to, and ask them for an amortization schedule to show you what your scheduled monthly payments are. And then if there's this balloon on the back end, because they either moved, during the pandemic or some event, financial event in your life, or just because you had a balloon mortgage, although we don't see those typically, if they moved a lot of the interest to the back end, you'll see exactly the date and what will be owed. And the idea is that you would need to either refinance prior to that point so that you can get on a regular fixed amortized mortgage where it's the same monthly payment for the life of the loan until it's paid off, or you're going to have to sell the property so that you can satisfy the loan if you don't have the assets to be able to pay off that large balloon payment on the back end. Is that the challenge, that you're wondering how are you going to stay in the house if you can't refinance it?
Yes, I thought maybe there was another option somewhere. But like you said, that sounds good, because like I say, I have a annuity, but that might not work at the time.
Well, the annuity is providing you a regular stream of income, which sounds like it's working right now. But if you all of a sudden have this large payment at the end to cover all of the interest, you know, you would either have to pull that out of savings or you'd have some other asset that you'd have to convert to cash so you could satisfy that large balloon payment on the back end. If you're unable to do that, then you would need to, you know, refinance the property. Why wouldn't you be able to refinance it? Do you have bad credit, or is
I'm retired and I'm on Social Security.
Okay.
But
right.
I can do a little work. A little.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's do this. What I'd like to do is have my team get your information. I'm going to have one of our certified financial counselors give you a call just to help you look at that amortization schedule and come up with a plan on where you need to go from here. So what you will do is, if you're interested in this, give us your information. This won't cost you anything. One of our volunteer coaches or counselors will give you a call. You'll get the amortization schedule from your mortgage company. And I think once you have that information, they'll be able to help you analyze it and talk about what your options are. Does that sound good?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Very good. So you stay on the line. We'll get your information, and then we'll have one of our certified Christian financial counselors give you a call. And Flora, thanks for your call today. We appreciate it very much. 800-525-7000 is the number to call. We've got some lines open today. We'd love to hear from you with whatever is on your mind. Let's head to Cleveland, Ohio. Hi, Naomi. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about a 529 plan. I bought a plan to try to have some kind of an inheritance for my grandchild, and have been modestly putting like Christmas presents, birthday present money in it. He has recently been diagnosed with severe autism.
Yeah.
And my daughter was concerned when she found out about the 529 plan about him being able to access that money when the time comes.
Yeah.
And suggested an ABLE fund, but I guess I'm looking for what do I do if he's never going to be able to sign for himself and won't really be, you know, essentially disabled for the rest of his life.
Yeah. Well, the ABLE account, and I'm sorry to hear about his medical condition, the ABLE account is actually a part of the same tax code under Section 529. It's just the 529A, which stands for ABLE, which is the state-run savings program for eligible people with disabilities so that they can save in a tax-advantaged way. And it's under the same code that also allows for the 529 college savings plan. And so you are able to do a transfer from the 529 college savings to the 529A or ABLE. The beneficiary is the account owner, and the income earned by the account is not taxed. So that makes it a pretty low cost but very effective tool for saving for this purpose so that you can take advantage of public benefits for income, health care, and food and housing assistance without the assets in this disqualifying you in any way. So what I would do you have a financial advisor that you work with?
Well, I moved from Wisconsin to Ohio to take care of my mom with dementia. So my financial planner suggested that I go to somewhere in Cleveland, but I didn't know, because my grandson's in California, how that all would relate.
Okay, yeah.
So and he referred me to Ohio, to somebody in Ohio, and I don't have one here.
Okay. So what I do is reach out to a certified Kingdom advisor there in your area who can kind of walk you through all of this, whether you qualify for the ABLE account and how you'd go about transferring it over and just understanding exactly how those accounts work. But it may be a great tool for you, especially for those funds that are already in the 529 plan, to be moved over and available for his benefit throughout the rest of his life. To find a certified Kingdom advisor in your state, you can just head to our website, faithfi.com, and just click Find a CKA. Naomi, thanks for your call today. We appreciate it. We'll be right back with much more. Stay with us.
Grateful to have you with us today on Faith and Finance Live. I'm Rob West. Heading back to the phones to take your calls, let's head to Florida. Hi, Linda. Go right ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a credit card that's about $12,000, and my income is Social Security, only $1,100 a month. And I'm wondering if I can get the interest rate down on that or what I can do to, help. I need help.
Yeah, no, I understand that, Linda, especially on a fixed income. I know that can be challenging. Let me ask you, what led to the debt in the first place, and do you feel like you've been able to stop whatever got you to this point so that we wouldn't be adding to it in the future?
Yeah, I can stop using it. I think I used it the other day by accident, but I just pulled out the wrong card, and, you know, but anyway.
Okay. I guess what I want to make sure of is that typically when there's credit card debt, it's just living beyond your means. And I understand living on a fixed income is challenging. So if that's the case and you've not made the changes in your spending plan to be able to eliminate the use of that credit card for unbudgeted purchases, then I would say, you know, we need to address that first. But if it was a one-time event that led to it or a series of events, or you've kind of already right-sized your budget, then that's different. Do you follow?
Yeah, I was doing pretty good. And then my sister told me I should take my dog to the vet. And so I did, and it was $300, and I used the card. And then it just spiraled. She wanted me to get furniture and put it on my card, and she was dying. And, you know, I said, okay, I put it on the card, and things from there. I'm pretty sure, yeah, I did put it on my, needed a bed, and I ended up, getting one.
Sure, sure.
And gave it away to my niece because it didn't work for me, and I have chronic pain all the time.
Well, I'm so sorry to hear that. No, I realize that life can be challenging, and I think the key is we just need to make sure, you know, as you work toward getting this paid down and ultimately pay it off, that to the best of your ability, you try to build up a little bit of a nest egg or an emergency reserve so that when the unexpected comes, we fall back on that and we don't create this cycle where you're, you know, charging up debt with money you don't have and then paying it down and then charging it up again. And that's going to come with just really trying to limit your spending wherever possible. And again, I realize that's easier said than done. In terms of the answer to your question about how to get this paid off, my preferred approach, especially with the amount of debt that you have at $12,000, would be what's called a debt management program. You might also hear it referred to as credit counseling. And basically what happens is the account is closed. Now, you could have another account, a debit card, or even another credit card if you wanted to, although, again, I'd be very careful with that. But whatever card goes into the debt management program, the card is closed. You would make one monthly payment through a nonprofit credit counseling agency. We prefer Christian Credit Counselors. They've worked with hundreds and hundreds of our listeners. And through the lower interest rate, which is what would happen, every credit card company has a reduced interest rate that they offer whenever a card is placed in their credit counseling program. So you'd be able to take advantage of a lower interest rate. And then by sending one level monthly payment combined with that lower interest rate, you'll pay it off through credit counseling 80% faster on average. And so you would just head to ChristianCreditCounselors.org. They would meet with you over the phone, help you work up your budget, tell you what that lower interest rate would be. And if that makes sense to you, then you could enter the card into the program. And I think that would help you, you know, get this going in the right direction without you having to take out a new loan to pay it off or consolidate it or anything like that. Does that make sense?
Okay. You said ChristianCounseling.org?
Yeah, let me give you that to you again. It's ChristianCreditCounselors.org. ChristianCreditCounselors.org.
Wait, hold on.
Sure. Let's do this. I'm going to have you stay on the line, and my team will get on and make sure you get that exactly the way you need it. But I think that's going to help you accomplish what you're looking for, Linda. So you hold the line, and we'll give you that web address when you're ready. Thanks for calling today. To Spokane, Washington. Hi, CJ. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I had a question about saving for my kids. I have four younger kids, and I'm in a position where I've been blessed that I can start saving money for them. But I'm not sure if they're all planning on college, and I know I like that savings vehicle for it, but I don't want to be locked into that if they're not going. Is there anything that I can do? Anything better or anything like that?
Well, I think the key is to recognize the limitations on any of these types of accounts. So one is a 529 college savings, but you're right. Unless you were taking it out on a pro rata basis for scholarship awards or grants, the money really has to be used for qualified educational expenses, or else you're not going to get the benefit from it. So if you want it more widely available than college, you probably don't need to put it in a 529. You'll also hear when it comes to kids a lot about what's called a custodial account. The challenge with that type of account is that it becomes the child's asset at the age of majority. So whatever that is in your state, typically 18, it's automatically their asset. So if they want to buy a sports car, they can buy a sports car. If they're making, you know, the poor lifestyle decisions at that point, it could accelerate that. If they're not financially mature, just in terms of their ability to handle money, which many 18-year-olds aren't, you know, that would potentially create problems. So the easiest way to go about this, CJ, is just to open an account for each one of the children in your name, or jointly, if you're married, you and your wife would open accounts. And you could open different accounts for each child, and essentially you'd earmark one for each child, but it's still your asset. You control it. And then I would make a systematic investment into the account every month, or a lump sum if you've got it, and then you'd have to decide how you want to invest it. If it's money that, because they're young, is 10 plus years out, I would probably put it in the stock market, especially now with it being down. A robo-advisor would be a great solution. It's low cost. It would automatically rebalance it among the investment options every time you make a deposit, and there wouldn't be any transaction costs. I would look at Betterment or the Schwab Intelligent Portfolios. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Thanks for joining us today on Faith and Finance Live, where we apply the wisdom from God's Word to your financial decisions and choices. We want to be a hopeful, encouraging, but Christ-centered approach to your stewardship of the financial resources God has entrusted to you. We've got some lines open today for your calls and questions at 800-525-7000. We'd love to hear from you. Let's head back to the phones and to Chicago. Let's see, Fort Myers. Phil, go right ahead.
Hi, Rob. Thank you for your ministry, and thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I have a question regarding credit union versus bank. We're new to the Fort Myers area, and we're interested in finding a good local entity to work with. And I'm not sure if the credit union, it's not FDIC insured because it's a credit union, but they do have some sort of other insurance.
Yes.
So what is your take on that?
Yeah, be happy to. Well, you know, you could go either direction. Credit unions, especially if you want a local relationship, tend to have lower fees and better interest rates on savings accounts and loans than brick and mortar banks that you might find in your area. Now, where you can find as competitive rates or even better rates in some cases is through the online banks. But if you want a local branch that you can walk into, get to know someone, you probably do want to look at a credit union option just to take advantage of those lower fees and higher interest rates. The FDIC equivalent for credit unions is the same in terms of, you know, the protection that it provides. So, you know, you're going to get the same, you know, insurance based on the failure of that institution, whether you're with a credit union or a bank. It's just called a different name. So I wouldn't have any concern about that when you open this account.
Well, that's wonderful. That's good news. And thank you so much. I appreciate your helping me out with that decision.
Okay, you're welcome. Thanks for calling into the program today. We appreciate it. By the way, as you are looking at that, what the term is, NCUA, you are going to want to look for that. That means they're a part of the government agency that protects credit union members. On occasion, you will find credit unions that are through a state charter, and they're going to have potentially private insurance, although none of those have ever failed. I would prefer you be with a credit union that's a part of the NCUA, the National Credit Union Administration, and that is essentially exactly the same as FDIC. Yeah. Phil, we appreciate your call today. Thanks for being on the program. 800-525-7000 is the number to call. We've got some lines open today, and we'd love to hear from you. Our team is standing by. To St. Charles, Illinois, Debbie, go right ahead.
Hi, Rob. Quick question.
Hi. Yeah.
We are selling our home, and by God's goodness, we're going to net over $375,000 to $400,000. And we are will be moving to Kentucky. We're going to rent for short term till we find the right home and or build. My question is, where do I park the proceeds, knowing that you can't put more than a certain amount in any one bank?
Yeah. Well, you've got a couple of options. One is you could use multiple banks, so you could park half of it in one bank and then put the balance in another. Keep in mind, you can actually get more than $250,000 in FDIC insurance at the same bank as long as you have different account categories. So, for instance, one account category would be an individual account in your name only, and another investment or another account category would be a joint account held jointly between you and your husband. If you did it that way and you split it between those two account types or categories, you could actually get up to $250,000 on each of them. But if you wanted to have the proceeds titled jointly, in terms of the whole amount, and you didn't want some of it in a different category like titled individually, then you'd have to use more than one bank. And so I'd probably have a primary relationship, and then maybe at least if you didn't use two online banks, have a second bank as an online bank that you attach electronically to the other one so you could move money back and forth. Does that make sense?
Sure. Oh, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Came up with that question this morning and thought, oh, I don't know the answer.
Okay. Very good. Well, yeah, that should give you what you need. I think the key for you is, to go ahead and take advantage of these high interest rates. I mean, how long do you have to park this money before you'd use it again?
It could be a month. It could be 9 months. We're moving out of state, so we're not sure if we'll find a home. Things are turning over quickly down there, or we'll build. And, I mean, we already have money, in different online accounts and different things. But obviously, we don't want to tie it up if we find something.
Yeah, very good. I think that's the key, is having it readily available, liquid, but safe. And the nice thing is, at 4% interest, which you can get on these high-yield savings accounts right now with FDIC insurance, on $340,000, I mean, you could make, nearly $14,000 over the next year. If it sits that long, I realize it may not. But I think that's definitely the direction you want to head with this. So hopefully that helps you. We appreciate your call today. Thanks for being on the program. 800-525-7000 is the number to call, no matter what your financial question is today. If you want to talk about debt repayment, maybe it's saving for the future, balancing that budget, or giving wisely, whatever it might be, we'd love to hear from you today. We'll help you tackle whatever you're thinking about financially. Let's take an email. These come into us every day at askrob@faithfi.com, and we'll tackle this one from Yvonne. She says, I listened to your program. Someone called in asking about I-bonds. I heard about them about a year ago, but I didn't invest in them. But I'd love to know your thoughts. What do you think today? And what I would say is I-bonds were fairly attractive last year. That really is no longer the case. We just got the new rate as of yesterday, May the 1st, that's going to be good for the next 6 months. And it's down to the composite rate is now at 4.3%. Now, keep in mind, last year we were up at 9.6. The latest rate that just expired in May was 6.8%. Those were very attractive, obviously, with essentially a zero risk investment. But now that it's down at 4.3, and given the fact that with an I-bond, you've got to lock up the money for at least 12 months, even though you can get it back after 12 months with a small penalty, you absolutely can't touch it for 12 months. And if you look right now, you can get a 12-month CD at over 5%. So there would be no reason to put money, new money, in my opinion, into an I-bond, lock it up for 12 months when you could get a better rate and a certificate of deposit. And keep in mind, this 4.3 rate is only good for 6 months. We'll get a new one in October. And given the Fed's focus on getting inflation under control through raising interest rates, I expect that rate will continue to come down. So I would say, unless there's a real specific purpose for it, Yvonne, I'd probably pass on I-bonds given this new rate is significantly below what you can get on a CD. We appreciate you writing in to us. Folks, if you have a question, feel free to send it along. Just email it to askrob@faithfi.com. We'd love to tackle it. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back in our final segment, room for more questions. So what is that financial question you've been wrestling with? We'll help you apply the wisdom from God's Word, the principles and passages to whatever you're dealing with today. Phone lines are open, perhaps one just for you, 800-525-7000. Give us a call and we'll be back with much more just around the corner. By the way, if you haven't checked out our website recently, jump into the FaithFi community when you visit faithfi.com. That's faithfi.com. Stay with us. Much more to come just around the corner. Thanks for joining us today on Faith and Finance Live. I'm Rob West. Let's head right back to the phones to Ohio. Hi, Stacy. Thanks for calling today. How can I help?
Hello. I've been hearing a lot about the cashless society, and I think they're calling it Fed now, and they were talking about your money, and they were going to just all of a sudden tell us that we can't use cash any longer. And what's going to happen to our money that's in the bank, and how do we convert that, and how do they roll that over to wherever they're guiding us or directing us?
Yeah. Well, there's pieces of truth in that, and then there's just a lot of falsehoods out there with regard to what folks are hearing and what's being said on the internet about FedNow and digital currencies and where it's all headed. So let me try to bring some clarity to this for you. FedNow is launching, and basically that's a payment system that's going to allow you to facilitate payments through the Federal Reserve. So it's like the current payment systems that are out there. It's a digital payment system. The reason that it's being created is it's going to be more efficient for timely transactions. So currently, if you want to process a payment, you can't do that on Sunday. I mean, you can't do that 7 days a week, 24/7. But the FedNow program, which they're rolling out, is going to be available 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. And so it does create an opportunity for folks who need instantaneous transactions to take place. The FedNow system will do that. But the FedNow process has nothing to do with what's also being discussed, and that is a central bank digital currency, which is basically where we would have a digital dollar, but where it would run through the central bank. That's still a long way off if it ever happens. The reason is it's going to take Congress before we would ever see that. Congress is charged with coinage in this country according to the Constitution. So the Fed can't do that. The Treasury can't do that. It would actually take Congress and the president for us to have a digital dollar. And there's real problems with that idea. in that the Fed would have access to all of your transaction information, know exactly how much money you have, where it's being spent. And that kind of infringement on our privacy is something that a lot of folks have real concern with, myself included. And so I think we're going to have significant debates about this before we would ever see that come to pass. And it's a good way off. China's been working on theirs since 2016, and they're still in a beta phase. We just got the latest first step of the research on this last year, where the U.S. government has begun to look at it, but it's still very, very early. So I think the bottom line is, could we have a central bank digital currency down the road? Yes. It's fraught with problems. There'll be a lot of debate in Congress before it ever sees the light of day. And it's completely different than the FedNow program, which is essentially a payment system to facilitate transactions. Is that helpful?
Well, yes, it is. It is. Coming from you is very helpful. But now I do have to get myself out of debt, and I'm debt-free, and now I have my cash, and I don't want them to mess with my cash.
Yes, I understand. Well, nobody's going to mess with your cash quite yet, so I think you're in a pretty good spot. I'm glad to hear. I couldn't hear everything you said there, but it sounds like you're debt-free. That's great. I would just continue on this track and see what you can do to learn how to manage money God's way. In fact, if you want to stay on the line, I'll send you a copy of Howard Dayton's book, Your Money Counts, that I think will be an encouragement to you, help you continue to grow in your understanding of God's way of handling money. We appreciate you being on the program today, Stacy. Let's see, to Merrillville, Indiana. Hi, Barbara. Go ahead.
Hi there, Rob. I first want to say thank you so much for this ministry. You've been so helpful to so many. My question has to do with final expenses, death and burial, insurance products versus prepaid funeral expenses. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would rather you just save yourself as opposed to using insurance and just take what you would have been paying for an insurance policy and just continue to park that away in a savings account so you've got that money available for whatever you might need it for along the way. But then it also could be there as, you know, funds to be able to cover these expenses at that point, rather than paying for a policy when you probably have the assets. It's just a matter of making sure they're readily available. I wouldn't be opposed to prepaid funeral expenses as long as you do your homework on that. I mean, these funeral homes can go out of business if you wanted to change your plans. In some cases, they're not portable, moving from one state or funeral home to another. So there is a limited amount of flexibility. There's also often some hidden charges. So I would just do your homework as to what decisions you're making, what the strength of the funeral home that you're committing this money to, and making sure that you really are committed to the plans that you're making now. And if you did change your mind, what options you have. So I like the idea clearly of you pre-planning and taking that burden off of your loved ones at an already difficult time. And I like the fact that you'd have that, already covered in a lot of the decisions made. I just want to make sure you go into it asking a lot of questions so that you understand exactly what you're getting into. Does that make sense?
Certainly that does. Someone had told me, though, that there was a system in place where the state will guarantee the funds if a funeral home goes out of business, that it would be backed up by the state.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not familiar with that, and that may be, on a state-by-state basis that is the case. So I would be interested to look for your state, whether that's, something that's in place there. I'm not aware of that being available nationwide.
Okay. All right.
But it'd be a good question to ask as you do your homework. Yeah, exactly right. Hey, thanks for calling today, Barbara. We appreciate it. To Crystal River, Florida. Hi, Karen. Go ahead.
Hi there. This is about my tithes, and I drew out money from my 401k to go on my 70th birthday with my husband to Italy and to Greece. Now I'm thinking, should I tithe on that money that I drew out to go on my vacation? I don't want to short God, and with my tithes.
Yeah. That's well, I question. certainly appreciate your desire to be found faithful in your giving. If you're applying the principle of the tithe, Karen, I mean, you can never outgive God, so it's never a bad idea to give. But if you're applying the principle of the tithe specifically to this money, you know, that's not your increase. So if you have money in a savings account and you withdraw it, just by virtue of you taking it out, that doesn't mean that you've received an increase. It just means that you've taken money out. Applying the principle of tithe to an increase would be when you receive money as either from your job, as a part of your compensation, maybe you receive an inheritance or a gift. You could even, you know, look at Social Security or a pension as your increase, and you would give a tenth of that. But essentially, money that you've already received, you've already tithed on that money. And so by virtue of you pulling it out of a savings account and spending it on a vacation doesn't really allow the principle of the tithe to come into play. Does that make sense?
That'll make me feel a lot better. Thank you so much.
Okay. Hey, where are you going in Italy?
Venice and Florence and Rome. I want to go to Rome. And then, so.
That sounds amazing. And when do you go?
Yeah. September 2nd.
Okay. Very good. Well, listen, happy birthday in advance. And thanks for being on the program today. We appreciate it. Let's head to Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Patricia.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling because my husband and I are contemplating buying a home that so we would be closer to our son. It would be a second home. I've retired, but he has 4 years left to work, and we're wondering if now is the time to take that mortgage and take some money out of our 401 or Roth IRA to pay for the home.
I see. All right. So give me kind of a quick rundown of where you're at. So what is your age?
My age is 65.
Okay. And your husband?
My husband is 61.
Okay. And how long do you all plan to continue to work?
He's going to work 4 more years till he's 65. I retired.
Okay. Very good. And what do you have in the way of investable assets inside your all of your retirement accounts together, roughly?
About $1.9 million.
Okay. All right. And do you own your current home free and clear?
Correct. We have no debt.
You have no debt. All right. Very good. And what would you be looking to spend on this second home?
Probably about $350,000.
Okay. All right. Very good. And how much of that 1.9 is in the Roth?
About $450,000.
Okay. And are you pulling an income from any of those retirement accounts, or are you just living solely on your husband's income?
We just live solely on my husband's income.
Okay. And do you have enough surplus where you could absorb this mortgage on the $350,000 if you had to take that?
Yes.
Okay. Do you all really have a conviction to be debt-free, or would you be interested in taking on a mortgage and then paying it down over time?
Well, we have a conviction for being debt-free, but we're worried about taking out money out of our savings that's for our retirement.
Sure. And what kind of income stream are you going to need in retirement alongside Social Security once your husband stops working? Do you know roughly how much you're going to need per month?
Probably about $5,000, $6,000 a month.
Okay. All right. You know, you should be fine with that. I mean, it's, you know, if you took 4% a year on 1.9, and that's prior to whatever growth will occur over the next 4 years, you could generate $76,000 a year. So I think you guys are in pretty good shape. I would just talk to your CPA about the best way to do it from a tax standpoint. That may be to take it out of the Roth. It may be the pre-tax money. But I think you're going to be in great shape, you know, no problem to go ahead and pay for this out of cash. Hang on the line. We'll talk a bit more off the air. That's going to do it for us today. Thanks to my team today, Robert, Dan, and Amy. Faith and Finance Live is a partnership between Moody Radio and Faith Five. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.